just before I finished sitting, these two words popped up in my head, and they seem worth exploring. One is, the word is exploring, and the other word is discovering. And what's the difference between exploration and discovery? I remember Rudy used to talk about the problem of becoming a professional seeker. People who spent their whole life identifying with seeking and being pretty much terrified of finding. And he cautioned us against that. Exploration is the journey, or so it appears, because we're all looking for something, and something implies a kind of agenda, and we sort of set up for ourselves an idea of the thing we're looking for. When you have an idea of what you're looking for, it kind of allows you to discount a lot of things. Well, if I'm looking for this, then it can't be that, 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 no, not that, no, not that. So, in a certain sense, you are determining the thing you're going to find. And it's interesting, a little bit like dating today, you know. People go out on these endless dates and they meet all these people who measure up to 82%, 74%, 93%. Almost nobody's 100%. And there's always a reason to reject somebody, always. And it's much easier to reject things than to accept them. It's much easier to feel protected by saying no than to feel the vulnerability of saying yes. Saying yes to something implies a relationship. Saying no to something, it's more comfortable. You don't have to relate, you don't have to try, you don't have to do, you don't have to. You're sort of free on some level. No, 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 no. And in a way you become more and more isolated in your freedom, more isolated in your sense of, well, if I don't touch something, it can't touch me and I won't be harmed by it. So the idea of exploring for many people implies not finding. Because if you find, your sense of exploration may be over. But here's where it gets interesting. When you don't explore, when you're not in search of something, discovery happens all the time. The thing you begin to discover, because you're not looking, is what's in front of you. And you discover the very thing you're looking at. Now, not everybody does this because they're searching. And so the thing that's in front of them is not what they want. So they keep looking. So they see this thing, and they go, nope, 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 nope. And they don't see what's in front of them. There's no discovery. there's no discovery because they're always going to the next thing. They're always looking beyond. But for someone who's discovering, the richness of what is sitting in front of you is so powerful, is so profound, so unending, so potentially full and endless, that you walk away with a sense of amazement, constant amazement at what's being revealed. Everywhere, everywhere. So the idea of saying no to something hardly makes sense. It's like simply being with what is and going, it's so amazing. I get to sit with each of you in this room, and rather than go, no. Let's get rid of this group. Let's go to another group. And we'll find somebody else who comes who's going to be a hell of a lot more exciting than this group. And that's a real problem. That's a real problem because, you know, once you're rejecting everything in front of you, who knows what will come, and why won't you reject that? And probably you will. But when you say yes to what is, yes to what's in front of you, the miracle shows itself. It shows itself right there. You go. And it brings tears to your eyes. It astounds you. You go, how come I never saw that before? It was sitting there all the time. And the more I look at it, the more beautiful and wonderful and awesome and real and instructive and unexpected and surprising it becomes. And it gets richer and richer and richer, and your life becomes like, how do you open to that richness? How do you open to the unending fulfillment that keeps coming at you? Well, you just do. And you kind of just walk around with an ongoing thank you. An ongoing thank you. Over and over. Gratitude beyond understanding. Love, simple consciousness, a sense of shared presence, a shared luckiness. It's so lucky, we're so lucky to have found each other. We're so lucky to have what's right there. And it just comes upon you in such a profound way that the idea of exploring just seems absurd. Who has time to look for something else? It's right there. Literally right there. You know? I mean, the only reason we let go of the thing in front of us is because something tells us it's not enough, or it's not the thing, or it's not what we're looking for. There's something constantly nagging at us going, oh, but, no, maybe. This little crazy voice, sometimes it's not little, and sometimes it's not crazy, sometimes it's big. No, not that. You know, this person did something terrible to me 20 years ago. There's no way I'm going to ever forgive them for that. You know, there's something talking to us. What is it? Well, we all know what it is. It's called the mind. The mind. Rudy had a very important phrase. It's not his phrase, but it's a phrase he repeated a lot. The mind is the slayer of the soul. So these are all terms that mean different things to everybody. But what really does it mean? Let's dissect it and go back into it. Where does mind form? When does it come into play? Well, again, taking advantage of being a grandpa and having an 18-month-old grandson and a 4.5-year-old granddaughter, I'm watching how it comes together. And My grandson is in the process of assembling the mind. And how is he assembling it? He's assembling it by seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, feeling the world and everything outside himself. And he's trying to name it all. He's trying to see how it works. He's trying to feel when it feels good and when it's hot, 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 hot. And he doesn't like hot. And he's starting to taste certain foods that are like, And he eats, I think I've talked about this, but he eats like a chipmunk. He fills his complete mouth with food, and you can't get another thing in. And he loves it. The minute there's a little bit of space, something else goes in. He's consuming life, and he's measuring it. And this thing is good, and this thing is not so good. And the stuff that's not so good, he's building up now into a storage space somewhere in the brain that says yes, no, good, bad, hot, cold, happy, sad. He's building all these things into a structure. And he's creating the mind. And the mind is completely about an interpretation of what is. In other words, at the very beginning, when he was really little, he was just looking. Or let's call it seeing. He was just seeing. And in a way, he was discovering. Certain things came back again over and over. They repeated. Certain things went, and certain things went like that. And he knew he related to the sweetness, to the smiles. I could see he would go like that. And if he was rejected or something was just not interesting to him, he was not building it into the system. So he was building the mind, as we all did, every one of us, and he was building this structure of who he, what he liked and what he didn't like. And he started to create this thing which is completely artificial. And we've all done it, so it's hard for you to hear that it's artificial, but it's this thing called, I am that. First of all, there's I am. He started creating this thing of I as a thing that I like this, I don't like that. He didn't even know it was an I yet, but he started doing this thing of I. It's really interesting. He's just learned how to walk down steps, and he keeps forgetting. And I keep watching him recover his mind. He has to go back into the memory bank and go, 2 times ago I got down that step without crawling down it. I stepped down. And he remembered. I can watch him remembering it. And he rebuilds the sequence of events to go, I can do that. And then he goes, I did that. And he has this locked-in knowledge of how to do something. It involves failure, and it involves success, and then it involves practice, and then it involves no thought at all. He's now locked into the idea, I am a person who goes up and down stairs without holding on, I just do it. And there's a great security in that, a great fulfillment in that, a great sense of accomplishment in that, and fulfillment. And he's a very becoming fuller and fuller and fuller and fuller and fuller and fuller, as we all did. But building into the structure of I am, which means I exist, is I am that which does this, or I am that which likes that. You are now, there's not just a perception, not just seeing, touching, smelling, hearing of the world. There is a relationship to that seeing, hearing, touching, feeling that becomes defining you. I see that, and now called a tree, tree. I see that, that's called a bird. I see that, it's called a moon. And you start to have a sense of things, and then you start to have a sense of valuing certain things. So, water. I want water. And you drink the water and it feels good. I like that. I like that. That's good. Apple juice. apple juice, better than water. Sweet, sweet, delicious, goes down really well. Energy from that. So apple juice becomes more preferable. And then your mother tells you, no, no, water. You can't drink too much apple juice. And you go, I only want the apple juice because it's sweet and it's delicious and you look forward to that thing. So now you're starting to judge what I want, what I don't want, who am I? I don't like this, I like that. And that's getting locked in. It's getting built. And this purity of just loving the water, just liking whatever it is that you're just liking, seeing, hearing, smelling, now has qualities that you are judging and you are thinking of good, bad, better than, less than, and you start to create this person, and it gets very elaborated very quickly. And then you're a person. You're a person with a mind. And now, when you see things, nothing comes at you purely and directly. It's all interpreted and judged and stored and fit into a structure, and that structure gets more and more amplified by your friends and your teachers and everyone around you, and this makes you happy, that doesn't, this makes you happy for a minute, then it doesn't, that makes you happy for an hour, this you hate, then suddenly you love it. You have this horribly complicated mind structure that gets built, and then here you are, and you're saying, why am I so unhappy? Why is this so hard? Why am I not as good as so-and-so? Why is so-and-so so beautiful and nobody looks at me? Why is so-and-so, you know, such a great athlete and I can't do anything? Who am I in the scheme of things? And you start to diminish yourself, and the mind gains enormous control over your being. Enormous. And then this peace and security, which wasn't that long-lived, it really was maybe a year of your life, that peace and security is now eaten up by this mind, which is, in a sense, working for you. It's working for you because it's telling you, don't eat that dog turd, you know? Don't stick your finger in that plug, you know? If you touch the fireplace, it's going to be hot. And it's very helpful. But it also is starting to do all these other things that tells you what makes you happy, what makes you sad, what makes you work hard, what makes you run away. It's telling you all these things, and after a while, it runs the show. And right now, everyone who comes to spiritual work is basically saying, how can I find my way to peace and harmony and stresslessness and joy and all the other things we're looking for in life? How can I find all that? And the basis of meditation is essentially one thing. Stop your mind. Turn off your mind. How do you turn off your mind? Well, what is the mind? It's thought and feeling. Thoughts and feelings are very predominant in your life, in your existence. Thoughts and feelings come and dominate everything about your life. You want to go toward the things that feel good, and you want to go to the things that make you think happy thoughts. And often you are not in control of any of this. The mind is just working on its own now, separately in a sense from your soul or from your being. The mind is just there, and you can't get release from it. How do I get away from this mind? Sometimes it serves you. So you're not completely determined to get away from it. Sometimes your mind makes you feel good. Your mind appreciates beauty, let's say. Or your mind tells you you're wonderful, that you're really a special person and no one understands you. You know, or your mind tells you you're the worst person in the world and you should, you know, jump off a bridge. Some minds do that. But in truth, the mind is just this renegade thought-emotion system that you have no control over and is running your show. And you're a total victim. And you've been a victim for a very long time. And so at some point you say to yourself, how do I get out of this? And if you're lucky, you discover a number of things. One thing, let's say plant-based drugs are not plant-based drugs, blow you sky high out of your own mind experience. And then you realize for a moment that your mind is just this construct, and you see yourself as free of it, maybe not happily, because some people get out of the mind and go, who am I, what am I? But you come back into this body, and then you go, how do I do that? How do I get out of here again? So you can try more plant-based stuff, or you can discover that there is an enormous system of practices in the world that tell you how to do it. The mystical teachings from the time of beginning of time that tell you how to do this. Almost all of them talk about sitting still and observing this mind and learning how to step back from it, or to discover that you are not caught. You are not in the mind. The mind is working for you. When you start to step back, when you sit and meditate, when you open your heart, when you release your third eye, when you just relax, you start to feel the beginning of freedom. Freedom from this I that wants and loves and holds on to and fears and has all these expectations. You start to lose all that. And you sit in a state of quiescent peacefulness. And you watch your thoughts come. And while you're meditating, you can watch them go. And you just sit in a state of peace until one of those thoughts comes up, and it's one that owns you, whatever it may be. And it comes up, and you go, oh no, not that one, not that one. It got you. It got you. You're owned. You're owned again by this horrible thought. You're a terrible person. You did something awful when you were 4 years old, or whatever. Your acts of shame, your acts of, you know, of embarrassment, or whatever it is, these things come up, and they just grab you, and they own you again. And then the whole cycle of thoughts comes back in, and there you are. The whole silencing of it lost its power, and you're weak. So you have to practice this every day. Practice silence, practice silence. And if you sit every day and you meditate, the space before the mind comes into play becomes more and more present. And then, at some point, you begin to have these very prolonged periods of satori, of mindlessness, where you're just accepting, being, loving, open, and available to the world. And then again, something comes and knocks that out. And then you say, what's wrong with me? How can I do? How can I get back to my other state? Well, the only way you get back is to sit still. At some point, after breaking down the ego mind over and over and over and over and over, at some point it will simply go. The mind will lose, and you will win. You win. The you that wins is that which precedes the mind. The thing that wins is who you are before your mind started to take over. The part of you, in a sense, that's always been watching this entire drama unfold. It's called presence. It's you. It is your true self. The true self wins. It wins when the mind finds that it can't do it. And the mind falls away, and then it becomes a tool for presence. You can use the mind when you need it, when you want it, when it has to be there. And you can lay it aside, and you discover that you begin to have this ability, when a thought comes up, to go, no. Not only when you're meditating, but all day long. An emotion comes up, and you go, no. All day long. You start to become what you always have been, which is presence itself. You start to be what you are, and who you've always been. And the revelation of that is enormous. You go, And at that point, the explorer goes away. The explorer looking goes away. But discovery does not end. Discovery is ongoing. And it's amazing what you discover. Amazing. And moment to moment, day by day, the newness of existence showers you with awareness, with new awareness, with growing awareness, with whatever is coming into being, because nothing that comes into being ever existed before. Everything that is happening now, and it's always completely 100% new, and you get to witness it. Even if it looks like what was there yesterday, it's not. It's what's there now. And it has a different quality, a different expression, and you get to know that expression, and you get to be part of that expression, and you get to walk around going, all you want to do is be, and to, if you will, serve, or express thy will be done. Except the problem with the word serve and the idea of thy will is that there's a you and an it. So even those go away. All you want to do is be it. Be. Just be. There's no noun. There's just being. And you walk around as a emanation of pure presence. You're just that. And every one of you in this room and whoever's listening to that, to this, you are that. You are pure presence even as we speak. And if your mind is coming at you with but, all I can tell you is that's your work. Your work is to let go of the but. Let go. Go, no. I don't care how big your butt is. I don't care how important it is. I don't care if it's something your mother did to you that you'll never get rid of. I don't care if it's something that the universe maimed you with. You know, they took away my arm, they took away my head, they took away my whatever. All of your excuses, all of your buts are just buts, and they don't hold up when you truly surrender. There's nothing that ever happened that is bigger than the totality that you are. What you are and what we are, what is going on here is a singular happening. It's a singular being. It's a verb. It doesn't stop. It just is going on. And whatever it is you. It's you. Not you and it. Just you. Your vision of it and your doorway to it, in a sense, your particular angle on it of being, comes from your seeing and your hearing and your smelling and your tasting and all of that. I described it last week in my talk as saying your body is your consciousness. This is consciousness. This is the thing through which you interact with what is. At some point, this will all go away. But what is goes nowhere. The presence through which this consciousness knows the world never goes anywhere, or so we're told. If it does, it does. We'll find out. My sense of it is it goes nowhere, that what you are is unending. It's also the qualities that they give it are blissful, radiant, beautiful. You are the discovery of what is. You are the thing that's discovering what is. At every moment, at every turn, at every option, opportunity, you are the discovery. You are the discoverer, in a sense, except there's no one getting it. Itself, it's discovering itself. And that's what you're doing here. You're discovering moment to moment to moment to moment the what-isness of existence. What a gift. I look forward to all of you ending your exploration. and discovering what and who you are, and realizing that you are the discovery and the discovery of all that is. Any questions? You know, it's really a process, guys. It's a work. You have to do the work. Unless you're just one of those gifted people who don't. If you're one of those people who hears what I say and says, oh, okay, I can stop thinking, I'll stop feeling, I'll stop analyzing, I'll stop judging, I'll stop. If you can just do that, you know, you're done. And it's not, that can happen. You can hear all this and go, oh, I get it, done. But if you don't have it happen that way, then you have to sit still and work it. It's worth it. Not to have the practice robs you of the muscle system that will reveal this to you, of the capacity to say no. No. No meaning not having to engage everything that comes at you. That muscle system is really important. It's important in the middle of your life. It's really important toward the end of your life. And if you haven't built that muscle while you're in the world growing, what are you going to do when the time comes and the world's being taken away from you? You're going to be clutching like mad. I'm not ready. What do you mean? I don't understand. It's a terrible place to end up. Is a life that's following its natural process, and you're not part of nature. You're part of this crazy mind that doesn't get it, that doesn't know how to respond to it, that has created a false world that's going to be taken away, and the world that's going to be revealed to you will be a shock, even though it's your own self that's revealed. You don't want to discover yourself that way, especially when you realize it's been there all the time. Why do you want to wait till the last moments of your life and maybe say, oh, finally, when you could say, oh, finally, right now? You know? And for some people, it's not, oh, finally, it's, what is that? You know, yourself is yourself, and it's here right this very second. It's not waiting. I mean, it doesn't care, but you don't have to wait to see it, to be it. In fact, there's no way for you not to be it. But there is a way for you to stop thinking you're not it. And that's the thing. That's the work. That's the practice. That's what we're doing here. And I just want to encourage it as best I can. Even if I have to repeat myself week after week after week. Because I don't know how else to get through. But, you know, I'm happy to keep doing it. And you'll listen to me until you either get tired of it or until you say, I can't do it, or whatever you decide to say to it. You know, you'll... At some point, you may just be so disgusted with hearing it from me, you'll just do it. It's probably the best response that you can get. So, anyway, if there's no questions, then I am